before finally dropping it. Once he's limped back home behind her, she disappears to shower, and he stems the bleeding with a Captain America Band-Aid from his bathroom cabinet. He needs a list. So, things he knows right now. 1. He's attracted to Henry. 2. He wants to kiss Henry again. 3. He has maybe wanted to kiss Henry for a while. As in, probably this whole time. He ticks off another list in his head. Henry, Sean, Liam, Han Solo, Rafael Luna and his loose collars. Sliding up to his desk, he pulls out the binder his mother gave him. Demographic engagement. Who they are and how to reach them. He drags his finger down to the LGBTQ+ tab and turns to the page he's looking for, titled, with mother's typical flair, The B Isn't Silent, a crash course on bisexual Americans. I want to start now, Alex says as he slams into the treaty room. His mother lowers her glasses to the tip of her nose, eyeing him over a pile of papers.
Start what? Getting your ass beat for barging in here while I'm working?
The job, he says. The campaign job. I don't want to wait until I graduate. I already read all the materials you gave me, twice. I have time. I can start now. She narrows her eyes at him.
You got a bug up your butt?
No, I just... One of his knees is bouncing impatiently. He forces it to stop. I'm ready. I've got less than one semester left. How much more could I possibly need to know to do this? Put me in, coach. Which is how he finds himself out of breath on a Monday afternoon after class, following a staffer who's managed to surpass even him in the caffeination department, on a breakneck tour of the campaign offices. He gets a badge with his name and photo on it, a desk in a shared cubicle, and a waspy cubicle mate from Boston named Hunter with an extremely punchable face. Alex is handed a folder of data from the latest focus groups and told to start drafting policy ideas for the end of the following week, and Waspy Hunter asks him 500 questions about his mom. Alex, very professionally, does not punch him. He just gets to work. He's definitely not thinking about Henry. He's not thinking about Henry when he puts in 23 hours in his first week of work, or when he's filling the rest of his hours with class and papers and going for long runs and drinking triple-shot coffees and poking around the Senate offices. He's not thinking about Henry in the shower or at night, alone and wide awake in his bed. Except for when he is. Which is always. This usually works. He doesn't understand why it's not working. When he's in the campaign offices, he keeps gravitating over to the big, busy whiteboards of the polling section, where Nora sits every day enshrined in graphs and spreadsheets. She's made easy friends with her co-workers, since competence translates directly to popularity in the campaign social culture, and nobody's better at numbers than her. He's not jealous, exactly. He's popular in his own department. Constantly cornered at the Keurig for second opinions on people's drafts and invited to after-work drinks he never has time for. At least 4 staffers of various genders have hit on him, and Waspy Hunter won't stop trying to convince him to come to his improv shows. He smiles handsomely over his coffee and makes sarcastic jokes, and the Alex Claremont Diaz charm initiative is as effective as ever. But Nora makes friends. And Alex ends up with acquaintances who think they know him because they've read his profile in New York Magazine, and perfectly fine people with perfectly fine bodies who want to take him home from the bar. None of it is satisfying. It never has been, not really. But it never mattered as much as it does now that there's the sharp counterpoint of Henry, who knows him. Henry, who's seen him in glasses and tolerates him at his most annoying and still kisses him like he wanted him, singularly. Not the idea of him. So it goes, and Henry is there in his head and his lecture notes and his cubicle every single stupid day, no matter how many shots of espresso he puts in his coffee. Nora would be the obvious choice for help.
if not for the fact that she's neck-deep in polling numbers. When she gets into her work like this, it's like trying to have a meaningful conversation with a high-speed computer that loves Chipotle and makes fun of what you're wearing. But she's his best friend, and she's sort of vaguely bisexual. She never dates, no time or desire, but if she did, she says it'd be an even distribution of the intern pool. She's as knowledgeable about the topic as she is about everything else. "Hello," she says from the floor as he drops a bag of burritos and a second bag of chips with guacamole on the coffee table. "You might have to put guacamole directly into my mouth with a spoon because I need both hands for the next 48 hours. Nora's grandparents, the Veep and Second Lady, live at the Naval Observatory, and her parents live just outside of Montpelier. But she's had the same airy one-bedroom in Columbia Heights since she transferred from MIT to GW. It's full of books and plants she tends to with complex spreadsheets of watering schedules. Tonight, she's sitting on her living room floor in a glowing circle of screens like some kind of Capitol Hill seance. To her left, the campaign laptop is open to an indecipherable page of data and bar graphs. To her right, her personal computer is running three news aggregators at the same time. In front of her, the TV is broadcasting CNN's Republican primary coverage, while the tablet in her lap is playing an old episode of Drag Race. She's holding her iPhone in her hand, and Alex hears the little whoosh of an email sending before she looks up at him.
"Barbacoa?"
she says hopefully as Alex drops onto the couch. "I've met you before today, so obviously."
"There's my future husband."
She leans over to pull a burrito out of the bag, rips off the foil, and shoves it into her mouth. "I'm not going to have a marriage of convenience with you if you're always embarrassing me with the way you eat burritos," Alex says, watching her chew. A black bean falls out of her mouth and lands on one of her keyboards.
"Aren't you from Texas?"
she says through her mouthful.
"I've seen you shotgun a bottle of barbecue sauce. Watch yourself, or I'm going to marry June instead."
This might be his opening into the conversation. "Hey, you know how you're always joking about dating June? Well, like, what if I dated a guy?" Not that he wants to date Henry, at all, ever, but just, like, hypothetically. Nora goes off on a data nerd tangent for the next 20 minutes about her updated take on whatever the fuck the Boyer-Moore majority vote algorithm is, and variables, and how it can be used in whatever work she's doing for the campaign. Or something. Honestly, Alex's concentration is drifting in and out. He's just working on summoning up courage until she talks herself into submission.
"Hey, so,
Alex attempts as she takes a burrito break. "Remember when we dated?" Nora swallows a massive bite and grins.
"Why, yes I do, Alejandro."
Alex forces a laugh. "So, knowing me as well as you do..."
"In the biblical sense?"
"Numbers on me being into dudes."
That pulls Nora up short, before she cocks her head to the side and says,
78% probability of latent bisexual tendencies. 100% probability this is not a hypothetical question."
"Yeah. So,"
he coughs. "Weird thing happened. You know how Henry came to New Year's? He kinda kissed me."
"Oh, no shit?"
Nora says, nodding appreciatively.
"Nice."
Alex stares at her. "You're not surprised?"
"I mean,"
she shrugs,
"he's gay, and you're hot, so..."
He sits up so quickly, he almost drops his burrito on the floor.
Wait, what makes you think he's gay? Did he tell you he was?"
"No, I just, like, you know."
She gesticulates as if to describe her usual thought process. It's as incomprehensible as her brain.
"I observe patterns and data, and they form logical conclusions, and he's just gay. He's always been gay."
"I..."
"What? Dude, have you met him? Isn't he supposed to be your best friend or whatever? He's gay. Like, Fire Island on the 4th of July gay. Did you really not know?"
Alex lifts his hands helplessly.
No? Alex, I thought you were supposed to be smart.
Me too. How can he spring a kiss on me without even telling me he's gay first?
I mean, like, she attempts, is it possible he assumed you knew?
But he goes on dates with girls all the time.
Yeah, because princes aren't allowed to be gay,
Nora says, as if it's the most obvious thing in the world.
Why do you think they're always photographed?
Alex lets that sink in for half a second and remembers this is supposed to be about his gay panic, not Henry's.
Okay, so, wait. Jesus. Can we go back to the part where he kissed me?
Ooh, yes, Nora says.
She licks a glob of guacamole off the screen of her phone.
Happily. Was he a good kisser? Was there tongue? Did you like it?
Never mind, Alex says instantly. Forget I asked.
Since when are you a prude? Nora demands. Last year, you made me listen to every nasty detail about going down on Amber Forrester from June's internship.
Do not, he says, hiding his face behind the crook of his elbow.
Then spill.
I seriously hope you die, he says. Yes, he was a good kisser, and there was tongue.
I fucking knew it, she says, still waters, deep dicking.
Stop, he groans.
Prince Henry is a biscuit, Nora says. Let him sop you up.
I'm leaving. She throws her head back and cackles, and seriously, Alex has got to get more friends.
Did you like it, though?
A pause. What, he starts. What do you think it would mean if I did?
Well, babe, you've been wanting him to dick you down forever, right?
Alex almost chokes on his tongue.
What?
Nora looks at him.
Oh, shit! Did you not know that either? Shit.
I didn't mean to, like, tell you. Is it time for this conversation?
Maybe, he says. What?
She puts her burrito down on the coffee table and shakes her fingers out like she does when she's about to write a complicated code. Alex suddenly feels intimidated at having her undivided attention.
Let me lay out some observations for you, she says. You extrapolate. First, you've been like Draco Malfoy level obsessed with Henry for years. Do not interrupt me. And since the royal wedding, you've gotten his phone number and used it not to set up any appearances, but instead to long distance flirt with him all day, every day. You're constantly making big cow eyes at your phone, and if somebody asks you who you're texting, you act like you got caught watching porn. You know his sleep schedule, he knows your sleep schedule, and you're in a noticeably worse mood if you go a day without talking to him. You spent the entire New Year's party straight up ignoring the who's who of hot people who want to fuck America's most eligible bachelor to literally watch Henry stand next to the croquembouche. And he kissed you. With tongue. And you liked it. So, objectively, what do you think it means?
Alex stares. I mean, he says slowly. I don't know. Nora frowns, visibly giving up, resumes eating her burrito, and returns her attention to the news feed on her laptop.
Okay.
No, okay. Look, Alex says, I know, like, objectively on a fucking graphing calculator, it sounds like a huge embarrassing crush, but, I don't know. He was my sworn enemy until a couple months ago, and then we were friends. I guess. And now he's kissed me, and I don't know what we are.
Uh-huh,
Nora says, very much not listening.
Yep.
And still, he barrels on, in terms of, like, sexuality, what does that make me? Nora's eyes snap back up to him.
Oh, like, I thought we were already there with you being bi and everything.
She says, sorry, are we not? Did I skip ahead again? My bad. Hello, would you like to come out to me? I'm listening. Hi.
I don't know,
he half yells miserably. Am I? Do you think I'm bi?
I can't tell you that, Alex, she says. That's the whole point.
Shit, he says, dropping his head back on the cushions. I need someone to just tell me. How did you know you were?
I don't know, man. I was in my junior year of high school and I touched a boob. It wasn't very profound. Nobody's gonna write an off-Broadway play about it.
Really helpful.
Yep,
she says, chewing thoughtfully on a chip.
So what are you gonna do?
I have no idea, Alex says. He's totally ghosted me, so I guess it was awful or a stupid drunk mistake he regrets or...
Alex, she says, he likes you. He's freaking out. You're gonna have to decide how you feel about him and do something about it. He's not in a position to do anything else.
Alex has no idea what else to say about any of it. Nora's eyes drift back to one of her screens, where Anderson Cooper is unpacking the latest coverage of the Republican presidential hopefuls.
Any chance someone other than Richards gets the nomination?
Alex sighs.
Nope. Not according to anybody I've talked to.
It's almost cute how hard the others are still trying, she says,
and they lapse into silence. Alex is late. Again. His class is reviewing for the first exam today, and he's late because he lost track of time going over his speech for the campaign event he's doing in fucking Nebraska this weekend. Of all godforsaken places. It's Thursday, and he's hauling ass straight from work to the lecture hall, and his exam is next Tuesday, and he's going to fail because he's missing the review. The class is Ethical Issues in International Relations. He really has got to stop taking classes so painfully relevant to his life. He gets through the review in a haze of half-distracted shorthand and books it back toward the residence. He's pissed, honestly. Pissed at everything. A crawling, directionless bad mood that's carrying him up the stairs toward the east and west bedrooms. He throws his bag down at the door of his room and kicks his shoes into the hallway, watching them bounce crookedly across the ugly antique rug.
Well, good afternoon to you too, honey biscuit, June's voice says.
When Alex glances up, she's in her room across the hall, perched on a pastel pink wingback chair.
You look like shit.
Thanks, asshole. He recognizes the stack of magazines in her lap as her weekly tabloid roundup, and he's just decided he doesn't want to know when she chucks one at him.
New people for you, she says. You're on page 15. Oh, and your BFF's on page 31.
He casually extends her the finger over his shoulder and retreats into his room, slumping down onto the couch by the door with a magazine.
Since he has it, he might as well.
Page 15 is a picture of him the press team took 2 weeks ago. A nice little package on him helping the Smithsonian with an exhibit about his mom's historical presidential campaign. He's explaining the story behind a Claremont for Congress 04 yard sign, and there's a brief write-up alongside it about how dedicated he is to the family legacy, blah, blah, blah. He turns to page 31 and almost swears out loud. The headline, Who is Prince Henry's Mystery Blonde? Three photos. The first, Henry out at a cafe in London, smiling over coffees at some anonymously pretty blonde woman. The second, Henry, slightly out of focus, holding her hand as they duck behind the cafe. The third, Henry, halfway obscured by a shrub, kissing the corner of her mouth.
What the fuck?
There's a short article accompanying the photos that gives the girl's name, Emily something, an actress. And Alex was generally pissed before, but now he's very singularly pissed, his entire shitty mood funneled down to the point on the page where Henry's lips touch somebody's skin that's not his. Who the fuck does Henry think he is? How entitled, how aloof, how selfish do you have to be to spend months becoming someone's friend, let them show you all their weird, gross, weak parts, kiss them, make them question everything, ignore them for weeks, and go out with someone else and put it in the press. Everyone who's ever had a publicist knows the only way anything gets into people is if you want the world to know. He throws the magazine down and lunges to his feet, pacing. Fuck, Henry. He should never have trusted the silver spoon little shit. He should have listened to his gut. He inhales, exhales.
The thing is.
He doesn't know if, beyond the initial rush of anger, he actually believes Henry would do this. If he takes the Henry he saw in a teen magazine when he was 12, the Henry who was so cold to him at the Olympics, the Henry who slowly came unraveled to him over months, and the Henry who kissed him in the shadow of the White House, and he adds them up, he doesn't get this. Alex has a tactical brain, a politician's brain. It works fast, and it works in many, many directions at once. And right now, he's thinking through a puzzle. He's not always good at thinking, what if you were him? How would your life be? What would you have to do? Instead, he's thinking, how do these pieces slot together? He thinks about what Nora said. Why do you think they're always photographed? And he thinks about Henry's guardedness, the way he carries himself with a careful separation from the world around him, the tension at the corner of his mouth. Then he thinks, if there was a prince, and he was gay, and he kissed someone, and maybe it mattered, that prince might have to run a little bit of interference. And in one great mercurial swing, Alex is not just angry anymore. He's sad, too. He paces back over to the door and slides his phone out of his messenger bag, thumbs open his messages. He doesn't know which impulse to follow and wrestle into words that he can say to someone and make something, anything, happen. Faintly, under it all, it occurs to him, this is all a very not straight way to react to seeing your male frenemy kissing someone else in a magazine. A little laugh startles out of him, and he walks over to his bed and sits on the edge of it, considering. He considers texting Nora, asking her if he can come over to finally have some big epiphany. He considers calling Rafael Luna and meeting him for beers and asking to hear all about his first gay sexual exploits as an REI-wearing teenage anti-fascist. And he considers going downstairs and asking Amy about her transition and her wife and how she knew she was different. But in the moment, it feels right to go back to the source, to ask someone who's seen whatever is in his eyes when a boy touches him. Henry's out of the question, which leaves one person. Hello, says the voice over the phone. It's been at least a year since they last talked, but Liam's Texas drawl is unmistakable and warm in Alex's eardrum. He clears his throat. Hey, Liam. It's Alex.
I know, Liam says, desert dry.
How have you been?
A pause. The sound of quiet talking in the background. Dishes.
You want to tell me why you're really calling Alex?
Oh. He starts and stops. Tries again. This might sound weird, but, back in high school, did we have, like, a thing? Did I miss that? There's a clattering sound on the other side of the phone, like a fork being dropped on a plate.
Are you seriously calling me right now to talk about this? I'm at lunch with my boyfriend.
Oh. He didn't know Liam had a boyfriend. Sorry. The sound goes muffled, and when Liam speaks again, it's to someone else.
It's Alex. Yeah, him. I don't know, babe.
His voice comes back clear again.
What exactly are you asking me?
I mean, like, we messed around, but did it, like, mean something?
I don't think I can answer that question for you, Liam tells him.
If he's anything like Alex remembers, he's rubbing one hand on the underside of his jaw, raking through the stubble. He wonders faintly if, perhaps, his clear-as-day memory of Liam's stubble has just answered his own question for him.
Right, he says. You're right.
Look, man, Liam says, I don't know what kind of sexual crisis you're having right now, like 4 years after it would have been useful, but, well, I'm not saying what we did in high school makes you gay or bi or whatever, but I can tell you, I'm gay, and that even though I acted like what we were doing wasn't gay back then, it super was. He sighs. Does that help, Alex? My Bloody Mary is here, and I need to talk to it about this phone call.
Yeah, Alex says. I think so.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Liam sounds so long-suffering and tired that Alex thinks about all those times back in high school. The way Liam used to look at him. The silence between them since. And feels obligated to add. And, I'm sorry?
Jesus Christ.
Liam groans and hangs up. Chapter 6. Henry can't avoid him forever. There's one part of the post-royal wedding arrangement left to fulfill. Henry's presence at a state dinner at the end of January. England has a relatively new prime minister, and Ellen wants to meet him. Henry's coming too, staying in the residence as a courtesy. Alex smooths out the lapels on his tux and hovers close to June and Nora as the guests roll in, waiting at the north entrance near the photo line. He's aware that he's rocking anxiously on his heels, but can't seem to stop. Nora smirks but says nothing. She's keeping it quiet. He's still not ready to tell June. Telling his sister is irreversible, and he can't do that until he's figured out what exactly this is. Henry enters stage right. His suit is black, smooth, elegant, perfect. Alex wants to rip it off. His face is reserved, then downright ashen when he sees Alex in the entrance hall. His footsteps stutter, as if he's thinking of making a run for it. Alex is not above a flying tackle. Instead, he keeps walking up the steps, and... All right, photos, Zara hisses over Alex's shoulder.
Oh, Henry says, like an idiot.
Alex hates how much he likes the way that one stupid vowel curls in his accent. He's not even into British accents. He's into Henry's British accent.
Hey, Alex says under his breath. Fake smile, handshake, cameras flashing. Cool to see you're not dead or anything.
Henry says, adding to the list of vowel sounds he has to show for himself. It is, unfortunately, also sexy. After all these weeks, the bar is low.
We need to talk, Alex says,
but Zara is physically shoving them into a friendly formation, and there are more photos until Alex is being shepherded off with the girls to the state dining room, while Henry is hauled into photo ops with the prime minister. The entertainment for the night is a British indie rocker who looks like a root vegetable and is popular with people in Alex's demographic for reasons he can't even begin to understand. Henry is seated with the prime minister, and Alex sits and chews his food like it's personally wronged him and watches Henry from across the room, seething. Every so often, Henry will look up, catch Alex's eye, go pink around the ears, and return to his rice pilaf as if it's the most fascinating dish on the planet.
How dare Henry come into Alex's house looking like the goddamn James Bond offspring that he is, drink red wine with the prime minister, and act like he didn't slip Alex the tongue and ghost him for a month?
Nora, he says, leaning over to her while June is off chatting with an actress from Doctor Who. The night is starting to wind down, and Alex is over it.
Can you get Henry away from his table?
She slants a look at him.
Is this a diabolical scheme of seduction? She asks. If so, yes.
Sure, yes, that,
he says, and he gets up and heads for the back wall of the room, where the Secret Service is stationed.
Amy,
he hisses, grabbing her by the wrist. She makes a quick, aborted movement, clearly fighting a hardwired takedown reflex.
I need your help.
Where's the threat? She says immediately.
No, no, Jesus,
Alex swallows, not like that. I need to get Prince Henry alone. She blinks.
I don't follow.
I need to talk to him in private.
I can accompany you outside if you need to speak with him, but I'll have to get it approved with his security first,
No, Alex says. He scrubs a hand across his face, glancing back over his shoulder to confirm Henry's where he left him, being aggressively talked at by Nora.
I need him alone.
The slightest of expressions crosses over Amy's face. The best I can do is the Red Room. You take him any farther and it's a no-go. He looks over his shoulder again at the tall doors across the state dining room. The Red Room is empty on the other side, awaiting the after-dinner cocktails.
How long can I have?
He says. 5 minutes, I can make that work. He turns on his heel and stalks over to the ornamental display of chocolates, where Nora has apparently lured Henry with the promise of profiteroles. He plants himself between them. Hi, he says. Nora smiles. Henry's mouth drops open. Sorry to interrupt. Important, international relations stuff. And he seizes Henry by the elbow and yanks him bodily away.
Do you mind?
Henry has the nerve to say.
Shut your face, Alex says, briskly leading him away from the tables, where people are too busy mingling and listening to the music to notice Alex frog marching an heir to the throne out of the dining room.
They reach the door, and Amy is there. She hesitates, hand on the knob.
You're not going to kill him, are you? She says.
Probably not, Alex tells her. She opens the door just enough to let them through, and Alex hauls Henry into the Red Room with him.
What on God's earth are you doing?
Henry demands.
Shut up. Shut all the way up. Oh my God, Alex hisses.
And if he weren't already hell-bent on destroying Henry's infuriating idiot face with his mouth right now, he would consider doing it with his fist. He's focused on the burst of adrenaline carrying his feet over the antique rug. Henry's tie wrapped around his fist, the flash in Henry's eyes. He reaches the nearest wall, shoves Henry against it, and crushes their mouths together. Henry's too shocked to respond, mouth falling open slackly in a way that's more surprise than invitation. And for a horrified moment, Alex thinks he calculated all wrong. But then, Henry's kissing him back, and it's everything. It feels as good as, better than, he remembered. And he can't recall why they haven't been doing this the whole time, why they've been running belligerent circles around each other for so long without doing anything about it.
Wait, Henry says, breaking off.
He pulls back to look at Alex, wild-eyed, mouth a vivid red. And Alex could fucking scream if he weren't worried dignitaries in the next room might hear him.
Should we...
What?
I mean, should we... I don't know. Slow down?
Henry says, cringing so hard at himself that one eye closes.
Go for dinner first, or...
Alex is actually going to kill him.
We just had dinner.
Right, I mean, I just thought.
Stop thinking.
Yes, gladly.
In one frantic motion, Alex knocks the candelabra off the table next to them and pushes Henry onto it so he's sitting with his back against, Alex looks up and almost breaks into deranged laughter, a portrait of Alexander Hamilton. Henry's legs fall open readily, and Alex crowds up between them, wrenching Henry's head back into another searing kiss. They're really moving now, wrecking each other's suits, Henry's lip caught between Alex's teeth, the portrait's frame rattling against the wall when Henry's head drops back and bangs into it. Alex is at his throat, and he's somewhere between angry and giddy, caught up in the space between years of sworn hate and something else he's begun to suspect has always been there. It's white hot, and he feels crazy with it, lit up from the inside. Henry gives as good as he gets, hooking one knee around the back of Alex's thigh for leverage, delicate, royal sensibilities nowhere in the cut of his teeth. Alex has been learning for a while, Henry isn't what he thought, but it's something else to feel it this close up, the quiet burn in him, the pent-up person under the perfect veneer who tries and pushes and wants. He drops a hand onto Henry's thigh, feeling the electrical pulse there, the smooth fabric over hard muscle. He pushes up, up, and Henry's hand slams down over his, digging his nails in.
Time's up,
comes Amy's voice through a crack in the door. They freeze, Alex falling back onto his heels.
They can both hear it now, the sound of bodies moving too close for comfort, wrapping up the night. Henry's hips give one tiny push up into him, involuntarily, surprised, and Alex swears.
I'm going to die, Henry says helplessly.
I'm going to kill you, Alex tells him.
Yes, you are,
Henry agrees. Alex takes an unsteady step backward. People are going to be coming in here soon, Alex says, reaching down and trying not to fall on his face as he scoops up the candelabra and shoves it back onto the table. Henry is standing now, looking wobbly, his shirt untucked and his hair a mess. Alex reaches up in a panic and starts patting it back into place.
Fuck. You look. Fuck.
Henry fumbles with his shirt tail, eyes wide, and starts humming, God Save the Queen, under his breath.
What are you doing? Christ, I'm trying to make it.
He gestures inelegantly at the front of his pants.
Go away.
Alex very pointedly does not look down.
Okay, so, Alex says,
yeah,
so here's what we're gonna do. You are gonna go be like 500 feet away from me for the rest of the night, or else I'm going to do something that I will deeply regret in front of a lot of very important people.
All right. And then, Alex says, and he grabs Henry's tie again, close to the knot, and draws his mouth up to a breath away from Henry's. He hears Henry swallow. He wants to follow the sound down his throat.
And then you are going to come to the east bedroom on the second floor at 11 o'clock tonight, and I am going to do very bad things to you, and if you fucking ghost me again, I'm going to get you put on a fucking no-fly list.
Got it? Henry bites down on a sound that tries to escape his mouth and rasps.
Perfectly.
Alex is... Well, Alex is probably losing his mind. It's 10:48. He's pacing. He threw his jacket and tie over the back of the chair as soon as he returned to his room, and he's got the first two buttons of his dress shirt undone. His hands are twisted up in his hair. This is fine. It's fine. It's definitely a terrible idea, but it's fine. He's not sure if he should take anything else off. He's unsure of the dress code for inviting your sworn enemy turned fake best friend to your room to have sex with you, especially when that room is in the White House, and especially when that person is a guy, and especially when that guy is a Prince of England. The room is dimly lit. A single lamp, in the corner by the couch, washing the deep blues of the walls neutral. He's moved all his campaign files from the bed to the desk and straightened out the bedspread. He looks at the ancient fireplace, the carved details of the mantle almost as old as the country itself, and it may not be Kensington Palace, but it looks all right. God, if any ghosts of founding fathers are hanging around the White House tonight, they must really be suffering. He's trying not to think too hard about what comes next. He may not have experience in practical application, but he's done research. He has diagrams. He can do this. He really, really wants to do this. That much he's sure about. He closes his eyes, grounds himself with his fingertips on the cool surface of his desk, the feathery little edges of papers there. His mind flashes to Henry, the smooth lines of his suit, the way his breath brushed Alex's cheek when he kissed him. His stomach does some embarrassing acrobatics he plans to never tell anyone about, ever. Henry. The prince. Henry, the boy in the garden. Henry. The boy in his bed. He doesn't, he reminds himself, even have feelings for the guy.
Really?
There's a knock on the door. Alex checks his phone. 10:54. He opens the door. Alex stands there and exhales slowly, eyes on Henry. He's not sure he's ever let himself just look. Henry is tall and gorgeous, half royalty, half movie star, red wine lingering on his lips. He's left his jacket and tie behind, and the sleeves of his shirt are pushed up to his elbows. He looks nervous around the corners of his eyes, but he smiles at Alex with one side of his pink mouth and says,
"Sorry, I'm early."
Alex bites his lip.
"Find your way here, okay?"
there was a very helpful Secret Service agent, Henry says. I think her name was Amy?
Alex smiles fully now.
Get in here.
Henry's grin takes over his entire face. Not his photograph grin, but one that is crinkly and unguarded and infectious. He hooks his fingertips behind Alex's elbow, and Alex follows his lead, bare feet nudging between Henry's dress shoes. Henry's breath ghosts over Alex's lips, their noses brushing, and when he finally connects, he's smiling into it. Henry shuts and locks the door behind them, sliding one hand up the nape of Alex's neck, cradling it. There's something different about the way he's kissing now. It's measured, deliberate, soft. Alex isn't sure why or what to do with it. He settles for pulling Henry in by the sway of his waist, pressing their bodies flush. He kisses back, but he lets himself be kissed however Henry wants to kiss him, which right now is exactly how he would have expected Prince Charming to kiss in the first place, sweet and deep, and like they're standing at sunrise in the fucking moors. He can practically feel the wind in his hair. It's ridiculous. Henry breaks off and says, "How do you want to do this?" And Alex remembers, suddenly, this is not a sunrise in the moors type of situation. He grabs Henry by his loosened collar, pushes a little, and says, "Get on the couch." Henry's breath hitches, and he complies. Alex moves to stand over him, looking down at that soft, pink mouth. He feels himself standing at a very tall, very dangerous precipice, with no intention of backing away. Henry looks up at him, expectant, hungry.
"You've been dodging me for weeks," Alex says, widening his stance so his knees bracket Henry's.
He leans down and braces one hand against the back of the couch, the other grazing over the vulnerable dip of Henry's throat.
"You went out with a girl."
"I'm gay," Henry tells him flatly.
One of his broad palms flattens over Alex's hip, and Alex inhales sharply, either at the touch or at hearing Henry finally say it out loud.
"Not something wise to pursue as a member of the royal family. And I wasn't sure you weren't going to murder me for kissing you."
"Then why'd you do it?"
Alex asks him. He leans into Henry's neck, dragging his lips over the sensitive skin just behind his ear. He thinks Henry might be holding his breath.
"Because I hoped you wouldn't murder me. I had suspicions you might want me to," Henry says.
He hisses a little when Alex bites down lightly on the side of his neck.
"Or I thought, until I saw you with Nora, and then I was jealous. And I was drunk and an idiot who got sick of waiting for the answer to present itself."
"You were jealous," Alex says. "You want me."
Henry moves abruptly, heaving Alex off balance with both hands and down into his lap, eyes blazing, and he says in a low and deadly voice Alex has never heard from him before,
"Yes, you preening arse, I've wanted you long enough that I won't have you tease me for another fucking second."
Turns out, being on the receiving end of Henry's royal authority is an extreme fucking turn-on. He thinks, as he's hauled into a bruising kiss, that he'll never forgive himself for it. So, like, fuck the moors. Henry gets a grip on Alex's hips and pulls him close, so Alex is properly straddling his lap, and he kisses hard now, more like he had in the Red Room, with teeth. It shouldn't work so perfectly. It absolutely makes no sense, but it does. There's something about the two of them, the way they ignite at different temperatures, Alex's frenetic energy and Henry's aching sureness. He grinds down into Henry's lap, grunting as he's met with Henry already half-hard under him, and Henry's curse in response is buried in Alex's mouth. The kisses turn messy, then urgent and graceless, and Alex gets lost in the drag and slide and press of Henry's lips, the sweet liquor of it. He pushes his hands into Henry's hair, and it's as soft as he always imagined when he would trace the photo of Henry in June's magazine, lush and thick under his fingers. Henry melts at the touch, wraps his arms around Alex's waist, and holds him there. Alex isn't going anywhere. He kisses Henry until it feels like he can't breathe, until it feels like he's going to forget both of their names and titles, until they're only two people tangled up in a dark room making a brilliant, epic, unstoppable mistake. He manages to get the next two buttons on his shirt undone before Henry grabs it by the tails and pulls it off over his head and makes quick work of his own. Alex tries not to be in awe of the simple agility of his hands, tries not to think about classical piano or how swift and smooth years of polo have trained Henry to be.
"Hang on," Henry says, and Alex is already groaning in protest,
but Henry pulls back and rests his fingertips on Alex's lips to shush him.
"I want..."
His voice starts and stops, and he's looking like he's resolving not to cringe at himself again. He gathers himself, stroking a finger up to Alex's cheek before jutting his chin out defiantly.
"I want you on the bed."
Alex goes fully silent and still, looking into Henry's eyes, and the question there, "Are you going to stop this now that it's real?"
"Well, come on, Your Highness," Alex says, shifting his weight to give Henry a last tease before he stands.
"You're a dick," Henry says,
but he follows, smiling. Alex climbs onto the bed, sliding back to prop himself up on his elbows by the pillows, watching as Henry kicks off his shoes and regains his bearings. He looks transformed in the lamplight, like a god of debauchery, painted gold with his hair all mussed up and his eyes heavy-lidded. Alex lets himself stare, the whipcord muscle under his skin, lean and long and lithe. The spot right at the tip of his waist below his ribs looks impossibly soft, and Alex might die if he can't fit his hand into that little curve in the next 5 seconds. In an instant of sudden, vivid clarity, he can't believe he ever thought he was straight.
"Quit stalling," Alex says, pointedly interrupting the moment.
"Bossy," Henry says, and he complies.
Henry's body settles over him with a warm, steady weight, one of his thighs sliding between Alex's legs and his hands bracing on the pillows, and Alex feels the point of contact like a static shock at his shoulders, his hips, the center of his chest. One of Henry's hands slides up his stomach and stops, having encountered the old silver key on the chain resting over his sternum.
"What's this?"
Alex huffs impatiently.
"The key to my mom's house in Texas," he says,
winding a hand back into Henry's hair.
"I started wearing it when I moved here. I guess I thought it would remind me of where I came from or something."
"Did I or did I not tell you to quit stalling?" Henry looks up into his eyes, speechless, and Alex tugs him down into another all-consuming kiss, and Henry bears down on him fully, pressing him into the bed. Alex's other hand finds that dip of Henry's waist, and he swallows a sound at how devastating it feels under his palm. He's never been kissed like this, as if the feeling could swallow him up whole, Henry's body grinding down and covering every inch of his. He moves his mouth from Henry's to the side of his neck, the spot below his ear, kisses and kisses it, and bares his teeth. Alex knows it'll probably leave a mark, which is against rule number one of clandestine hookups for political offspring, and probably royals, too. He doesn't care. He feels Henry find the waistband of his pants, the button, the zipper, the elastic of his underwear, and then everything goes very hazy, very quickly. He opens his eyes to see Henry bringing his hand demurely up to his elegant royal mouth to spit on it.
"Oh my fucking God,"
Alex says, and Henry grins crookedly as he gets back to work.
"Fuck."
His body is moving, his mouth spilling words.
"I can't believe. God, you are the most insufferable goddamn bastard on the face of the planet. Do you know that? Fuck. You're infuriating. You're the worst. You're..."
"Do you ever stop talking?" Henry says. "Such a mouth on you."
And when Alex looks again, he finds Henry watching him raptly, eyes bright and smiling. He keeps eye contact and his rhythm at the same time, and Alex was wrong before. Henry's going to be the one to kill him, not the other way around.
"Wait," Alex says, clenching his fist in the bedspread, and Henry immediately stills. "I mean, yes, obviously, oh my God, but, like,
If you keep doing that, I'm gonna... Alex's breath catches. That's not allowed. Before I get to see you naked.
Henry tilts his head and smirks.
All right.
Alex flips them over, kicking off his pants until only his underwear is left slung low on his hips, and he climbs up the length of Henry's body, watching his face grow anxious, eager.
Hi, he says when he reaches Henry's eye level.
Hello,
Henry says back.
I'm going to take your pants off now,
Alex tells him.
Yes, good. Carry on.
Alex does, and one of Henry's hands slides down, leveraging one of Alex's thighs up so their bodies meet again right at the hard crux between them, and they both groan. Alex thinks dizzily that it's been nearly 5 years of foreplay, and enough is enough. He moves his lips down to Henry's chest, and he feels under his mouth the beat Henry's heart skips at the realization of what Alex intends. His own heartbeat is probably falling out of rhythm, too. He's in so far over his head, but that's good. That's pretty much his comfort zone. He kisses Henry's solar plexus, his stomach, the stretch of skin above his waistband.
Alex begins. I've never actually done this before.
Alex, Henry says, reaching down to stroke at Alex's hair.
You don't have to.
No.
I want to,
Alex says, tugging at Henry's waistband.
I just need you to tell me if it's awful.
Henry is speechless again, looking as if he can't believe his fucking luck.
Okay. Of course.
Alex pictures Henry barefoot in a Kensington Palace kitchen and the little sliver of vulnerability he got to see so early on, and he thrills at Henry now, in his bed, spread out and naked and wanting. This can't be really happening after everything. But miraculously, it is.
If he's going by the way Henry's body responds, by the way Henry's hand sweeps up into his hair and clutches a fistful of curls, he guesses he does okay for a first try. He looks up the length of Henry's body and is met with burning eye contact, a red lip caught between white teeth. Henry drops his head back on the pillow and groans something that sounds like,
"Fucking eyelashes."
He's maybe a little bit in awe of how Henry arches up off the mattress and hearing his sweet, posh voice reciting a litany of profanities to the ceiling. Alex is living for it, watching Henry come undone, letting him be whatever he needs to be while alone with Alex behind a locked door. He's surprised to find himself hauled up to Henry's mouth and kissed hungrily. He's been with girls who didn't like to be kissed afterward and girls who didn't mind it, but Henry revels in it. Based on the deep and comprehensive way he's kissing him. It occurs to him to make a comment about narcissism, but instead...
Not awful,
Alex says between kisses, resting his head on the pillow next to Henry's to catch his breath.
Definitely adequate,
Henry answers, grinning, and he scoops Alex up against his chest greedily, as if he's trying to touch all of him at once. Henry's hands are huge on his back. His jaw sharp and rough with a long day's stubble, his shoulders broad enough to eclipse Alex when he rolls them over and pins Alex to the mattress. None of it feels anything like anything he's felt before, but it's just as good. Maybe better. Henry's kissing him aggressively once more, confident in a way that's rare from Henry. Messy earnestness and rough focus. Not a dutiful prince, but any other 20-something boy enjoying himself, doing something he likes, something he's good at. And he is good at it. Alex makes a mental note to figure out which shadowy gay noble taught Henry all this and send the man a fruit basket. Henry returns the favor happily, hungrily, and Alex doesn't know or care what sounds or words come out of his mouth. He thinks one of them is sweetheart and another is motherfucker. Henry is one talented bastard, a man of many hidden gifts, Alex muses half hysterically, a true prodigy. God save the queen. When he's done, he presses a sticky kiss in the crease of Alex's leg, where he'd slung it over his shoulder, managing to come off polite. And Alex wants to drag Henry up by the hair, but his body is boneless and wrecked. He's blissed out, dead. ascended to the next plane, merely a pair of eyes floating through a dopamine haze. The mattress shifts, and Henry moves up to the pillows, nuzzling his face into the hollow of Alex's throat. Alex makes a vague noise of approval, and his arms fumble around Henry's waist, but he's helpless to do much else. He's sure he used to know quite a lot of words, in more than one language, in fact, but he can't seem to recall any of them. Henry hums, the tip of his nose catching on Alex's. If I had known this was all it took to shut you up, I'd have done it ages ago. With a feat of Herculean strength, he summons up two whole words. Fuck you. Distantly, through a slowly clearing fog, through a messy kiss, Alex can't help marveling at the knowledge that he's crossed some kind of Rubicon. Here, in this room that's almost as old as the country it's in, like Washington crossing the Delaware. He laughs into Henry's mouth, instantly caught up in his own dramatic mental portrait of the two of them, painted in oils, young icons of their nations, naked and shining wet in the lamplight. He wishes Henry could see it. Wonders if he'd find the images funny. Henry rolls over onto his back. Alex's body wants to follow and tuck into his side, but he stays where he is, watching from a few safe inches away. He can see a muscle in Henry's jaw flexing. Hey, he says. He pokes Henry in the arm. Don't freak out. I'm not freaking out, he says, enunciating the words. Alex wriggles an inch closer in the sheets. It was fun, Alex says. I had fun. You had fun, right? Definitely, he says, in a tone that sends a lazy spark up Alex's spine. Okay. Cool. So, we can do this again. Anytime you want, Alex says, dragging the back of his knuckles down Henry's shoulder. And you know this doesn't, like, change anything between us, right? We're still whatever we were before, just, you know, with blowjobs. Henry covers his eyes with one hand. Right. So, Alex says, changing tracks by stretching languidly. I guess I should tell you, I'm bisexual. Good to know, Henry says. His eyes flicker down to Alex's hip, where it's bared above the sheet. And he says, as much to himself as to Alex, I am very, very gay. Alex watches his small smile, the way it wrinkles the corner of his eyes, and very deliberately does not kiss it. Part of his brain keeps getting stuck on how strange and strangely wonderful it is to see Henry like this, open and bare in every way. Henry leans across the pillow to Alex and presses a soft kiss to his mouth, and Alex feels fingertips brush over his jaw. The touch is so gentle, he has to once again remind himself not to care too much. Hey, Alex tells him, sliding his mouth closer to Henry's ear. You're welcome to stay as long as you want, but I should warn you, it's probably in both of our best interests if you go back to your room before morning. Unless you want the PPOs to lock the residence down and come requisition you from my boudoir. Ah, Henry says. He pulls away from Alex and rolls back over, looking up to the ceiling again like a man seeking penance from a wrathful god. You're right. You can stay for another round, if you want to, Alex offers. Henry coughs, scrubs a hand through his hair. I rather think I'd better get back to my room. Alex watches him fish his boxers from the foot of the bed and start pulling them back on, sitting up and shaking out his shoulders. It's for the best this way, he tells himself. Nobody will get any wrong ideas about what exactly this arrangement is. They're not going to spoon all night or wake up in each other's arms or eat breakfast together. Mutually satisfying sexual experiences do not a relationship make. Even if he did want that, there are a million reasons why this will never, ever be possible. Alex follows him to the door, watching him turn to hover there, awkwardly. Henry attempts, looking down at his feet. Alex rolls his eyes,
For fuck's sake, man. You just had my dick in your mouth. You can kiss me goodnight.
Henry looks back up at him, his mouth open and incredulous, and he throws his head back and laughs. And it's only him, the nerdy, neurotic, sweet, insomniac rich guy who constantly sends Alex photos of his dog, and something slots into place. He leans down and kisses him fiercely, and then he's grinning and gone.
You're doing what?
It's sooner than either of them expected, only 2 weeks since the state dinner, 2 weeks of wanting Henry back under him as soon as possible and saying everything short of that in their texts. June keeps looking at him like she's going to throw his phone in the Potomac.
An invitation-only charity polo match this weekend, Henry says over the phone. It's in...
He pauses, probably referring back to whatever itinerary Sean has given him.
Greenwich, Connecticut?
It's $10,000 a seat, but I can have you added to the list. Alex almost fumbles his coffee all over the south entryway. Amy glares at him.
Jesus, fuck! That is obscene! What are you raising money for, monocles for babies?
He covers the mouthpiece of his phone with his hand. Where's Zara? I need to clear my schedule for this weekend. He uncovers the phone.
Look, I guess I'll try to make it, but I'm really busy right now.
I'm sorry, Zara said you're bailing on the fundraiser this weekend because you're going to a polo match in Connecticut?
June asks from his bedroom doorway that night, almost startling another cup of coffee out of his hands.
Listen, Alex tells her, I'm trying to keep up a geopolitical public relations ruse here. Dude, people are writing fan fiction about y'all.
Yeah, Nora sent me that. I think you can give it a rest.
The Crown wants me to be there, he lies quickly.
She seems unconvinced and leaves him with a parting look he'd probably be concerned about if he cared more about things that aren't Henry's mouth right now. Which is how he ends up in his J. Crew best on a Saturday at the Greenwich Polo Club, wondering what the hell he's gotten himself into. The woman in front of him is wearing a hat with an entire taxidermied pigeon on it. High school lacrosse did not prepare him for this kind of sporting event. Henry on horseback is nothing new. Henry in full polo gear, the helmet, the polo sleeves capped right at the bulge of his biceps, the snug white pants tucked into tall leather boots, the intricately buckled leather knee padding, the leather gloves, is familiar. He has seen it before. Categorically, it should be boring. It should not provoke anything visceral, carnal, or bodice-ripping in nature in him at all. But Henry urging his horse across the field with the power of his thighs, his ass bouncing hard in the saddle, the way the muscles in his arms stretch and flex when he swings, looking the way he does and wearing the things he's wearing, it's a lot. He's sweating. It's February in Connecticut, and Alex is sweating under his coat. Worst of all, Henry is good. Alex doesn't pretend to care about the rules of the game, but his primary turn-on has always been competence. It's too easy to look at Henry's boots digging into the stirrups for leverage and conjure up a memory of bare calves underneath, bare feet planted just as firmly on the mattress. Henry's thighs open the same way, but with Alex between them. Sweat dripping down Henry's brow onto his throat. Just like that. He wants, God, after all this time ignoring it, he wants it again, now, right now. The match ends after a circle of hell amount of time, and Alex feels like he'll pass out or scream if he doesn't get his hands on Henry soon. Like the only thought possible in the universe is Henry's body and Henry's flushed face, and every other molecule in existence is just an inconvenience.
I don't like that look, Amy says when they reach the bottom of the stands, peering into his eyes. You look sweaty.
I'm gonna go, Alex says. Say hi to Henry. Amy's mouth settles into a grim line.
Please don't elaborate.
Yeah, I know, Alex says. Plausible deniability.
I don't know what you could possibly mean.
Sure. He rakes a hand through his hair. Yep. Enjoy your summit with the English delegation, she tells him flatly, and Alex sends up a vague prayer of thanks for staff and DAs. He legs it toward the stables, limbs already buzzing with a steady knowledge of Henry's body getting incrementally closer to his. Long, lean legs, grass stains on pristine, tight pants. Why does this sport have to be so completely repulsive while Henry looks so damn good doing it? Oh, shit. He barely stops himself from running headfirst into Henry in the flesh, who has rounded the corner of the stables. Oh, hello. They stand there staring at each other, 15 days removed from Henry swearing at the ceiling of Alex's bedroom and unsure how to proceed. Henry is still in his full polo regalia, gloves and all, and Alex can't decide if he is pleased or wants to brain him with a polo stick. Polo bat? Polo club? Polo mallet? This sport is a travesty. Henry breaks the silence by adding, I was coming to find you, actually. Yeah, hi. Here I am.
Here you are.
Alex glances over his shoulder. There's, cameras. 3 o'clock. Right, Henry says, straightening his shoulders. His hair is messy and slightly damp, color still high in his cheeks from exertion. He's going to look like goddamn Apollo in the photos when they go to press. Alex smiles, knowing they'll sell. Hey, isn't there, a thing, Alex says, you need to,
show me?
Henry looks at him, glances at the dozens of millionaires and socialites milling around, and back at him.
Now?
It was a 4.5-hour car ride up here, and I have to go back to D.C. in an hour, so